This is Herb Plambeck, your war correspondent,
speaking from Munich on the day that our troops went through Munich and completed the taking of this city. In this broadcast, I'm not going to say much about the battered buildings, about the white flags we see flying here now, about those Nazi shrines that are all about and now are just pretty well out of the picture, thank God. I'm going to speak about something else, and I've got six guests here who are going to speak about something else. I don't know if my emotions will get the best of me in this broadcast or not. They very well may. And if they do, I think you'll understand. Because with me here are six American prisoners of war released only 24 hours ago. Men who have been in Nazi slavery. Men who, if they chose to, could tell some harrowing experiences of what they have gone through. There are five Iowa men and one Minnesota man. I haven't been with them long enough to really get acquainted with them and their names. We have their serial numbers, we have their addresses, but we're just going to go up to these men and talk with them and have you hear their voices. I don't believe there is any way that we can say how wonderful it will be for these boys, through the magic of radio, to be able to get word back to their folks at home, and I'm sure that on the other end, the folks back home are going to be so thrilled they'll hardly know how to express themselves. Let's go to these boys. First, I know these two boys are from Sioux City. They came into service together, and they've gone through all these things together. What is your name, please?
Cecil Cardwell.
And yours?
Paul M. Boone.
Cecil, I'd like to speak to you first. Will you tell me how you felt when liberation came to you late yesterday?
Well, words can't express it. It was just too much almost to believe. I just can't say how I did feel. It was one of the happiest moments of my life.
I'm sure it was. And I imagine there were tears in your eyes.
There was.
Cecil, who are you hoping is listening in at home?
My wife and my three boys. My wife, Quinlan.
I'm sure that they are listening, and I know what a thrill it'll be to them. I want to talk with you just a little later about one or two other things. I'm going to go to you first, Private M. Bowden. And who is at home, at your home?
My wife, Valva, and my daughter, Connie.
How old is the daughter?
My daughter is six.
Oh, fine. I know she's getting a thrill out of your voice.
I know she is, too.
Tell me, what was the treatment like this winter when you were in prison?
Well, the treatment wasn't too good. They made us work, they call it Arbeit. We had to go out and they chased us out with the dogs.
You mean they actually set dogs on you?
Yes, they turned the dogs into the barracks and run us out.
Well, that is one of the ideals of Nazism, I presume. What kind of work did you do?
We had to work on the railroad and in the city, throwing bomb craters and helping build up the railroad. Anything to help their war effort.
Well, it must have been a hard thing to do, but we know what you were submitted to. How are you feeling now?
I feel fine.
You look fine, and it's wonderful to have you. And here's a young man from Truro, Iowa. What is your name?
Ben Watson.
Ben Watson, and where are your folks there, Ben?
They live on the farm near there, my grandfather.
And you were a farm boy before you were in the service?
That is right.
How are you now, Ben?
I'm fine now.
You
very happy.
Are fine. You look, though, as though your clothes have been pretty well beaten up in recent weeks.
Well, the same ones I came across the line with.
Well, it's been how long since you were taken captive?
Close to 5 months.
Well, I'm so glad, and everyone back home will be so glad that that liberty, freedom has come to you again, and that you are looking as well as you are. And here is a soldier from Redfield, Iowa. And what is your name?
Clarence Derry.
Clarence, who is waiting for you at home?
Well, I hope Mildred, my wife, and the rest of my boys.
I'm sure that they're listening in. And what impressed you most here at this enslavement that you were in?
Well, it was, hot rooms, so terrible rough, especially the food and the quarters that we had in cold weather.
Tell us a word about the quarters.
Well, where I was at one's place, we was allowed one small armload of green wood each 24 hours, and the men grouped up in groups of four and five and rolled up in the rags they gave us, they called blankets, to keep from freezing, although a lot of the men froze their feet and hands and had to be taken to the hospital, and where they went from there, of course, we had no way of knowing.
That was in the dead of the winter?
That's right. The clock was within below zero.
Oh, my. Well, I must go on to these other men here. Here is our boy from Minnesota. What is your name and where is your home?
Donald Chapman. The home is close to Oshawa, Minnesota.
Donald, how did you feel when the Rainbow Troops came in and liberated you men?
Oh, I can't say how I did feel. I was so glad to see American soldiers again and be free.
I know you were. Don, tell us something of what you experienced during your imprisonment.
The cold weather bothered bad, and they didn't feed us too good. And they did work us every day, just about.
And what about the food?
The food that they give us was not good, as well as not very much of it.
I'm going to talk to one or two of the other men on that, Donald. Thank you for being with us, and I know your people up in Minnesota are just as happy as anyone can be to hear your voice again. I'm going back to Private Caldwell. Caldwell, he said, is right, of Sioux City. Will you tell a word about the food, the overall picture as it was?
Well, the overall picture isn't very bright. According to the American standards of living, I suppose Jerry thinks it's all right. For an American prisoner, working on the railroad, we had 5 grams of black flour and 1 liter of water. 1 liter of water is about a quart. That was for our noon meal. For our supper meal, we'd get 3 or 4 potatoes, boiled potatoes, dirt and all, boiled with them. 6 men on a loaf of bread, and sometimes a little piece of cheese or a little piece of meat. That was the Jerry ration for the day.
Well, I don't see quite how you lived on it. I presume you've lost some weight, but I'm glad to say you look well. And now to the man who has been a prisoner longer than any of the others. He is Private
Wayne Doe.
And your home is where?
Marshalltown, Iowa.
Private Doe, I understand that you were confined in boxcars for some time.
Well, yes. When we first were captured, we're moving out of the place we're captured. We were put in boxcars, 50 men in a car. We were locked up for 5 days and nights with a half a loaf of bread per man for the whole time and a sixth of a pound can of meat for the whole time we were locked up in the cars.
It just doesn't seem possible that men like you could be so inhumanly treated. How long were you in prison?
Well, you mean in the cars, or?
No, I mean altogether.
Altogether, nearly 7 months.
I can imagine they were the longest 7 months you have ever experienced.
Yes, they were. The food proposition was the worst. During the winter, we were just staggering around for lack of food, and we're trying to go out and work. We're forced to work every day in any kind of weather. If it hadn't been for finally getting Red Cross parcels, we probably would have been in such shape we couldn't even move before the winter was over.
The voices you just heard were those of 6 Americans just liberated from a Nazi boxcar stockade after our 7th Army troops took Munich, first place of Nazidom. It was a rare privilege to be with those men, tears of joy still in their eyes, unable to find words to fully express their gratitude, but so appreciative for radio bringing their voices to their loved ones. This is Herb Planbeck returning you to WHO. Now another spot just for reserve in case. Hello, WHO Corndog Hour listeners. On this anniversary day that means so much to me and to the others who have worked so tirelessly in presenting this hour to you every Saturday noon, all these years, on this day I had hoped to be able to be with you by direct broadcast from where I now am deep in Germany. The fortunes of war, however, have again made for a sudden and unforeseen change in our best laid plans, so I trust you'll accept this greeting brought to you by transcription. I find it difficult to find just the right words with which to express my feelings, other than to say, as I often have before, no one can fully appreciate how grateful I am and how humble I feel for the privileges these past 8 or 9 years have brought. I doubt very much if there are words with which to adequately express myself. For the opportunity, Dr. B.J. Palmer, president of the Central Broadcasting Company, Mr. J.L. Milland, manager of WHO, Harold Fair, the program director, Jack Shelley, your news editor, and the others in the newsroom, and those in the mailroom and in the continuity and other departments have provided. And for the cooperation Paul Loyette and WHO's tireless group of engineers have given, and for the help Mrs. Bryson, Woody, Jack Kerrigan, Hale Bondurant, Harold Fulton, Bob Johnson, Don Hovey and the Symphony, Lucia, and every other group in office has given our department. And very, very emphatically, a million thanks to Bill Diamond, Eileen Shives, John Wherry, Bobby, and the other announcers who are on our show, who each deserves much more credit than what they sometimes get, whose job of carrying on more than speaks for itself. There are many others to whom I'm deeply indebted. I can't name them all, but I want to say thanks, though, to two other groups, our sponsors of this and our other broadcasts, and finally, those wonderful people whose loyalty and interest means everything to all of us in radio, you, the listeners. It seems so strange to speak to you from over here, more than 4,500 miles from where WHO's transmitter is sending out these words, the same instant that they're spoken down here in the land of great natural beauty, but where the unspeakable crime of Nazism has taken such a terrible toll. In these few moments we have, there's no time to speak further of the beauty of the Bavarian Alps and of the grim and bloody task our men of the 7th Army have encountered all through this area. Through the medium of these and other WHO programs, I've already told you of some of the experiences your boys and your neighbors have had, of the hardships and trials they've had to face, and of the cold and the mud and snow, even now in this month of May, and of the thoughts they have of home and of you, the hopes they have for the future, and the excitement and expectancy, especially of these past several weeks. We've told a little about the food they receive, thanks to the efforts of so many of you who are tuned into this broadcast, and of the letters they so much appreciate, and of the little gatherings they have, and their pet peeves, and their humor, and their heroism. And there's still so much more to tell, not only about your boys and their accomplishments, but also about the agriculture and people here. An agriculture very different from yours, with which I hope to deal more fully in the next several weeks. Just now, though, I'm thinking of the Corn Belt Hour anniversary, and that this is the first one I've had to miss, and how I hope it's the last one that I'll have to miss. It's meant so much to me, the Corn Belt Hour. I'll probably be out with your sons or husbands or brothers at the hour this program is heard, or I'll just be coming in from another eventful day. But I want to assure you, my thoughts are with you and my family today and every day, and that for me, the hour when I can again be back in that Studio A will be one of the happiest ones I can ever hope to have, just as the day of homecoming will be a precious, joyous, wonderful event for every man in uniform over here or wherever he's stationed. This is your farm editor, Herb Kleinbeck, in Germany, wishing he could be with you today and returning you again to WHO.